everyone. I'm Sindhu Bharadwaj, a finance and accounting specialist from Bangalore in India, with over 5 years of experience in Grant Thornton and Goldman Sachs. I'm now at UT Austin, the McComb School of Business, getting an MBA. Now, I always thought product management was for someone who had a computer science background and could understand millions of lines of complex code, until I met my amazing mentor who said, "Sindhu, that's rubbish. Product management is for anyone who is passionate about products, people, and has a keen sense of leadership." So in today's episode, I'm going to interview my mentor, Ranki Majikadumi. Now, for many years, Ranki has been a noteworthy leader and a powerhouse in the field of product management. She has dedicated her career to creating outstanding world-class products and is now investing her time to educate the next generation of product leaders. Her mission is to make the world of product management more accessible for product makers entering the field by providing insights and authentic experiences for the next generation to draw from. So welcome, Ranki. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much, Sindhu, for doing this interview. I'm so excited to share my insights in product management.
Absolutely. I think the first thing that all our listeners want to know is about how you got started in the field of product management.
Oh, great question. So after college, I decided I was going to do my MBA in urban planning, which I'm glad I stopped after a couple of classes because I realized I didn't have any interest in it. So I stopped doing that and I applied to a small company called Matthew Bender, and I started in the technical support department. And I was taking calls from bankruptcy attorneys on a bankruptcy filing, desktop bankruptcy filing application, and I kind of started from there. And I became the subject matter expert for this product, that I used to be the person that would go to the engineering team and say, these are the top five issues, and this is the ranking of them. And I went from there to becoming the content editor for that product. And then I went from there to, and when I was a content editor for that product, I worked with a product manager who owned it, and I would just study her. You know, she had all these business rules in her head, and I would just partner with her. I would say things to her like, let me call a core for you so that she wouldn't have to, just so that I can understand how she did her job. And then eventually she moved on, and then I became the product manager for that product. And then from there, I just became the product manager. I became the face of it. I would go to bankruptcy conferences. And that's sort of how I got started. And then from there, I moved on to working for another company that wanted to build a web-based version of that bankruptcy filing application. So I went ahead and did that. And then at that time, there was no web-based version of it. So it would have been the first in the market. Okay. And we decided, you know, to differentiate ourselves in the market by tying some pretty cool features to it, such as CRM. And then from there, I moved to Chicago, where I ended up working for the largest competitor at that time, for a bankruptcy filing program. I went there to go work for them. And then from there, I moved on to working on a CRM, working for a company that made CRM, web-based CRM tools for institutional investors, so that they can manage their funds, but I manage the investor portal of it. And then from there, I moved to San Jose. I fell in love and I moved to San Jose, and I work at PayPal now, where I'm, I help to create products that will help large enterprise merchants manage and grow their business.
Wow, that's an awesome journey. And something that I can see, Ranki, is that there have been so many different angles to the roles that you have been at over the years. How do you ramp up at a new role? How did you learn what to do when you started a new role?
Oh my God, this is such a great question. Okay, so here's how I've done it, the secret to my success. Any organization I join, the first thing I do is I make a list. I make a list of all my colleagues and the partner teams that they're on that I need to talk to, and their impact on not just my project, on my product, but also my team's products. Then I make a list of my boss's direct colleagues who manage those teams. And then for anybody outside our department, like our partner colleagues, like legal and compliance and so forth, same thing there. I make a list of who are my counterparts that I need to talk to in those parts of the company. And then I show that list to a senior member of the team that I just joined, or even a colleague, and I say, you know, help me. Did I get this right? They'll tell me who I missed, right? Like, did I miss the relationship management team? Did I miss the customer service team? Did I miss the technical support team? Did I miss infrastructure, for instance, right? Because, you know, if there's anything going on, who do I need to talk to there? IT. They'll help me, you know, fill in those gaps. And then what I do is I then show it to my boss. And I say to that person, okay, you know, these are the people I'm going to go meet. Do you have any feedback for me? Is there anybody I've missed? Once I get their approval, then I create what I call the meeting, the Runky meet and greet tour. And I send emails, I send Slack messages introducing myself. I schedule meetings and I go meet them. And for me, that, other than meeting me and understanding my background and what I'm there to do, but also for them to help me, because they have a historical context as to what that role needs to fulfill for the organization. And I ask, I ask questions, you know, what, how do you, like, in this role, what does success look like to you in 30 days? What does success look like to you in 60 days and 90 days? To kind of understand, you know, how my role impacts their part of the organization. And then I always ask this question at the end, how can I keep you up to date on my progress, right? And if they say schedule biweekly meetings, great, I schedule biweekly meetings. And I'll go meet them, and I'm always on time. And and then those relationships kind of develop, right, over time. And then what eventually happens is those people then, they start to ask you, well, career-wise, what do you want to do? And then they start to help you and invite you to other meetings, to do other presentations, and so forth. And then, and especially if you're aspiring for a certain kind of role in the future, they will be your advocates to fill out, because they're going to be filling out your 360s, right, for your manager. And so they'll be your, like, your advocate to go, oh my God, I've seen this person grow. This is how she's grown. And this is why she, you know, she should be in this role. And so forth. But this becomes really, really handy, not just with your own colleagues, but even people outside your own department, but also your boss's colleagues that you're meeting with. And then finally, the other thing I always say is this, you never stop learning. Any organization I go to, anybody I'm meeting with, any of those partners, I'm watching their leadership style. I'm watching how they lead. I'm watching how they manage their teams. I'm watching how they convey news to their teams, how they I'm watching how they coach their team, right? Especially my boss's colleagues, I'm watching their leadership style, because everybody has different leadership styles. And that's one of the honestly, that's the one of the first things I do when I start in a brand new company, the meet and greet tour, because always remember, somebody was in my role before I got there. And there's there's a reason why they're no longer there anymore. Whether they left on their own volition or whether or not they were let go, doesn't matter. But I need to understand, how can I make a success out of it?
Wow, that's amazing. So just to give a brief of what I understood, so you're saying invest time and efforts to create a network, keep them updated on your progress, and get them invested in your growth.
Absolutely.
Learn from their successes and their failures.
Exactly. I mean, that's why you cultivate alliances, basically. And then those alliances begin to raise your profile within the organization. And the other thing is, I always tell everybody this, people, is that never, the world is a small, it's a big world, but it's also kind of small. And especially this day and age, you never know when that person leaves and goes to another company, whether or not they're going to refer you to come work there. And it's big, it's a higher position. But those friendships that you're making, they may start out first as just introducing yourself, but you could really be making friends that last a lifetime.
Absolutely. I love that you have some emphasis on the personal aspect of it too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all, I mean, listen, we spent, what, over eight hours with each other every day. We spend more time with each other than we do family members. I think that there's something to learn from each other every single day. We just have to be open and open to receiving it. So.
Oh, definitely. And you know, just to jump off on that, before you started, is there anything you wish you had known?
Yes. In product management, yes. I wish I had known the importance of my voice. I didn't use my voice when I first started out in product management. And that, that can, that hurt me, and that didn't help me sometimes. I wish I had learned the importance of, as product managers, first of all, product management is the most humbling job there is, right? Because you're asking people to believe in your product vision, right? And to trust your instincts and to trust your gut. That's one. And two, and then when you do build that product and it's a success, it's now you. It's all those people that you bring together in a coalition to build, right? The problem is that when I first started out in product management, I didn't understand the importance of storytelling. I didn't understand that I could, by using my voice and telling stories of my product, that I could not only transform my customers and my leaders, but I can align with them. I can inspire a whole entire organization to rally around a product vision, right? I didn't understand that, and I didn't know it. And also, I didn't know that the importance of using my product, my voice, because when something's not going well, you have to be brave enough to say, this is not going well. Let's find a different way to fix this. And those are things that I wished I had done, I had learned sooner about not just product management, but even about myself, that I wasn't using my voice. And the other one is coalition building. So important. So important. You have to build a coalition to get your product vision out the door. You have to get your PMM to buy into your vision. You have to get your leadership to buy into your vision. And you have to bring all those people along with you on that journey. So along with the customer. So those are some of the things I wish I had learned early on. I wish I had known, actually. But yeah.
Wow, that's some great advice, especially on using your own voice. Now, I think that's applicable across industries, across functions. And you know, it's so great that you bring that up, and even coalition building. It's such an important skill to have to gain alignment without having authority.
Exactly. When you build a coalition, you lead without authority. You don't need your manager to come in and save the day. And you end up becoming that leader in the organization that people just kind of rely on. You become a persuader and influencer. So that's super important, especially also depending on the organization that you work in, right? Because if you work in big organizations, you're going to have to go bargain with your colleague to help you build something, right? And if you can kind of figure all that out without involving leadership, it's great. So I can't say enough about the coalition leadership, being transformational, and, you know, and telling your stories. So,
yeah. And from what I know, Ranki, you are an absolute people's champion. So more power to you.
Oh, thank you, my friend. Thank you.
So Ranki, I really love your website, RankiPM.com. I love the black and white play. I love your picture. But what I love the most is your tagline, uncovering product magic one story at a time. Now, can you please tell us what drove you to establish this platform to share your stories?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the important lessons of 2021 for me has been stepping to my purpose and using my voice. I wasn't planning to build a website. If you had talked to me this time last year, I would have told you I wanted to sleep because I just finished my MBA and all I wanted to do was sleep and watch movies. I had no plans to do anything else. What happened was, to make a very long story short, I wanted to speak so badly at a conference and I didn't get a chance to. And I was venting to my own mentor about not being chosen and that I really had important things I wanted to talk about, like imposter syndrome, authentic leadership. And so I was kind of explaining, you know, all these things that I didn't get a chance to do this and I was bummed by it. And my mentor says to me on the phone, she goes, "Can I ask you a question?" I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Why are you waiting for someone to create an opportunity for you?"
Right.
So I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "No, seriously." She's like, "Why are you waiting for someone to create an opportunity for you?" She's like, "If you have something to say in a product management space," she's like, "there's TED Talk." She goes, "You can create your own YouTube channel, Ranki."
Right.
So I just sort of, you know, I listened to her and I was kind of like, "All right, fine, whatever." I continued about my, you know, and I sort of continued about my day. And then a product school asked me to do a product talk. And I said, oh, yeah, all right. So I'm like, okay, you know, a couple of months later, they asked me to do a product talk. And I said, okay, this is cool. So I decided to do a product talk on lessons in product management for them. And then they mentioned to me, they're like, oh, by the way, if you have a blog, we'd love it. You would love it also. Mm-hmm. So I kept thinking, well, what would I like to write about? And so I started writing about, just on a Saturday, I started writing about what it felt like last summer. With how tumultuous last summer was, and how I had to lead my team in the middle of this, so I wrote that blog, and then the blog for imposter syndrome kind of came along, because one of my colleagues kind of came to me. She was a recent hire from another organization, and she was telling me she didn't feel like she belonged there, and that really got to me. So, and I couldn't publish that blog on Product School because Product School is more product management and so forth. So I needed a place to publish this. So blog, because I'm like, other people must feel this way because I remember feeling this way. And I didn't have a place to put it, to publish it. So I started talking to my best friend, who, of course, knows me so well. I've known him for several years, and he's a designer. And I'm like, you know, can you build a website for me? He's like, sure. So that website was just a conversation on a Saturday while I was walking. I walked 4 to 5 miles a day. It was literally just a conversation during walking. And he had some ideas, jotted it down, came back to me a couple of days later and said, what about this? And also because he knows me so well, he knows I'm not a fan of colors. I wear a lot of black and gray. So yeah, it was, it just worked out. he just kind of worked out, and then he's like, okay, I'm gonna build something for you in Wix. And that's how it started. And then I was able to then start publishing blogs like imposter syndrome, you know, the importance of mentoring young women, and that tagline, uncovering product magic one story at a time, that kind of came along because every story that I write about, right, there's product magic at the end of it, right? I can easily tell you mentoring young women or imposter syndrome, when I really realized the value of my voice and I started to use it, what product I was in the middle of building, right? And how that product turned out. I can tell you that for coalition leadership, for instance, the importance of being using your co-leadership style and being transformational, that same thing there. There's a product magic that came along with that too, because I was working with not just product makers like my designer, but my content person, but engineering, and how all these people together helped to build, you know, that product. And so to me, that's the product magic part, but the stories that go along with it, the lessons that I learned along the way about working with these incredibly awesome, talented people and how it just makes me a better leader at the end. That's really the product magic part. So.
Well, you do make it sound magical, Ronki.
Well, it is, right? If you think about it, right? You have all these people that you're working with that are so talented, and they all bring different things to the table, right? And the true value of it is we're not all the same people, right? My weakness is somebody else's strength, right? My strength is somebody else's weakness. And we sort of all balance each other out, right? And if we do it so good, so well, and we collaborate so well, we end up building really great products that change our customers' lives. So, absolutely. And benefits our organization. So,
yeah. And you know, one thing that really stood out to me is that when I asked you what was the one thing you wish you had known before starting in product management, and you say it was using your own voice. And today you've built your own platform to do that. So life has almost come a full circle for you.
Exactly. And yeah, and like I said, if now it's funny that because now I can actually use my own voice. I can write about things and experiences. Yeah. And so that's one of those lessons of 2021 is you should is just step into your purpose. And I'm so glad that I did because I have this forum where I can actually help to inspire the next generation of product managers. And I don't take it lightly at all. I'm so privileged. I feel like I'm so privileged to be able to do this. So,
and we're all the richer for it. So thank you so much, Ranki.
Oh, well, thank you, my friend.
And you know, when I think about imposter syndrome, I know around 82% of people suffer from varying degrees of imposter syndrome. So what was it that inspired you to write about imposter syndrome as one of your blog pieces?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I had a colleague come to me. We were just talking from another organization a couple of months ago, and this person was telling me that they didn't feel like they were smart enough to work in their organization. And it just gutted me. It gutted me because this person I love so much. She's like my sister, and I've known her for many years, and I just... And to me, she's like the trailblazer, right? So like... Early when we were starting our careers after college, I just thought she was much more mature and she had it all together more than I did, you know. And so and so it just gutted me because I thought, well, no, you're the one I was looking to. Like, looking what are you talking about?
Yes.
And then I thought about my own experiences with imposter syndrome. And I just remember that feeling of being in a conference room and like, I keep thinking I'm not smart enough to be here. Somebody's going to tap me on the shoulder and tell me I don't belong here. They'll tell me to get out.
Right.
I've sabotaged myself in interviews because of imposter syndrome, thinking, why are you all interviewing me? I'm not smart enough to work for your organization.
Wow.
I mean, listen, even like skip level meetings with, you know, leadership, I remember feeling like, why did somebody invite me to this meeting? I'm not smart enough to be here. And what changed all that for me was one day there was a woman I thought was just so together. I thought she had it all together. And I just thought I couldn't even be in the same room with this woman. And we just got to be friends and started talking one day. And then she told me about her own imposter syndrome and how all those meetings that I thought she was just kicking it, it turns out she was faking it until she made it. And I was going, wait, what? I'm like, wait, are you serious right now? She's like, yes. She's like, oh my God. She's like, I don't know what I'm doing, Ranki. And I'm like, oh, exactly. And I thought, oh my God, this woman that I just thought was much, much better at this than me. So that was one of the things that, that started it for me of sort of dealing with it. And then the other thing is, I think about my grandmother a lot. My grandmother didn't have the opportunities I have. And she sacrificed a lot for me to have it. And she, and I think about that a lot in, the, in that if she can create opportunities for me, then how can I not use my voice, deal with my own self-doubt, and then help the next generation that's coming along? Basically, if, you know, help build opportunities so that they can then build opportunities for somebody else. So that's sort of how it started. And then I tend to write in my journal a lot about a company. Like I write, okay, we released this product. This is how much revenue and stuff like that. This is how, how it's helping our customers. And so whenever on those days when my self-doubt is really kicking in, I'm going to take the time to go read my journal to remind myself that, you know, I belong here. You know, having a seat at the table, I deserve to have the seat at the table because this is what I've done to deserve them. But most importantly, I just kind of go back again to my grandmother and the fact that I am here because she created opportunities. So therefore, I must create opportunities for the next generation. So,
wow, that's some really deep advice, Ranki. And I must tell you, the blog on imposter syndrome is my absolute favorite. So for all you listeners out there, I'm going to make sure to leave a link below so you can definitely go and check it out. It also has some great advice on how to deal with imposter syndrome. So make sure to check it out.
Thank you, Sindhu.
Well, now, Ranki, I want to understand what my day will look like if I were to become a product manager. So could you please walk me through what a typical day in your life looks like?
Sure. So I will say this. The first thing I do when I get to work is I check my I check emails. And I categorize my priorities based on what impacts the business. So what impacts the business, for instance, is if there's a customer having some issues, that's important. So that becomes my number one priority to figure out what that issue is and work with their customer service person to resolve it or, or tech support or relationship management. That's the most important thing is the customer. The second thing is, if it's not a customer issue, if engineering is waiting for me to answer questions, that becomes number one. Because if engineering is doing their work and they're not waiting for me, that's a win, right? Because they're off, they're doing their thing. And then everything else comes after that. So that's sort of how I prioritize my days. What impacts the organization first? And then I move on from there. A typical day could be, you know, apart from dealing with what impacts the organization right away, it could be sprint planning. It could be writing stories. It could be meeting with my partners from other teams who I need their help to build a part of my product vision. It could be sharing an experience with all my partners as to here's what we want to build and why we want, here's the customer value, the business value, here's how it ties to the overall strategic goals of our organization. It could be that. It could be, you know, after, but stand up definitely. So dealing with the most important thing, going to stand up at 10 o'clock is super important. And then, of course, after that, everything else, sprint planning. But one thing I do before COVID that I really miss is every Wednesday at noon, I have lunch with my scrum team, my whole entire scrum team, and I have lunch together. I really miss that because it was a time for me to get to know them and to not just on a personal level, but just get to know them individually, and I kind of miss that. And then on Thursdays at noon, my tech lead, my box, my tech lead and my designer and myself would go off campus to go have lunch. It's same thing there to keep that relationship going. You know, I miss cultivating those relationships. And then I miss the one-on-ones. You know, I would have one-on-ones with my colleagues, their bosses, to make sure that they are getting everything they need from me. I miss those one-on-ones. So now with COVID, those are all being done virtually, but that's how I spend my day. The most important things first that impact the business, and then everything else after that. Writing stories, spring planning, multi-spring planning in some cases. And of course, virtual meetings, virtual lunches. Trying to figure out how I can, in some cases, even if I can negotiate a spot on a colleague's roadmap, but arranging that we inner source their code and that they'll support us and stuff like that. Bringing my PMO up to speed on what I'm doing. That's pretty much my, you know, how my days are. So.
Wow, it sounds like there's never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. This past 3 weeks, I've been in customer research interviews. So those have been very eye-opening for me. I've been doing a lot of those. If it's, and sometimes it's just even talking to customers and trying to understand what their needs are.
It sounds like there are so many facets and so many skills required to become a product manager. What would you narrow down and say, okay, these are the most essential skills for a PM?
So I think that product managers, in order to be successful, have to be able to build people and products. I put people first because because people are the most important asset in any organization.
Glad to hear you say that.
No, it's true, right? If your scrum team and your partners don't trust you, it's not going to happen. Bringing them along in your product vision, telling, that's super important. Opening opportunities for them, right? There are sometimes that, listen, somebody, a colleague will get promoted before you. And that's okay. That is okay. So to me, the people part first, and then the products part first. And the people part to me is empathy, right? Empathizing, especially in the last 19 months as we've been home. Women, like, for example, there are studies out there where women tend to get laid off in the middle of the pandemic. Not only that, but women are not being paid to do the household stuff, right? And then on top of that, women tend to be caretakers, right? They tend to be the caretakers of their husband's family, their own family, and other extended family members. And so empathizing, right, with any woman in your organization that's going through that and saying, listen, how can I help? What do you need? And in some cases, it may be as simple as, don't schedule a meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning because I'm driving my kids to school. It could be as simple as that. It could be as simple as, oh, listen, at 4 o'clock, I have to go pick up my kid. Can you record this call if you have to have it at 4, right? It could be as simple as that, but empathizing, listening, and just checking in, just saying, mm-hmm. how are you? I don't care even if you only just checked in just to talk about cupcakes, where you can get them the most, you know, the best cupcakes. But at least just checking in, I think is super important. Listening is super important. Mm-hmm. Your scrum teams or whoever will come to you, they will unload. That's okay. Let them unload. Don't offer feedback right away. Let them unload and then say, here are my thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And then help collaborate with them. I think those are all important things. Opening up opportunities for other people. I think even if that means that person leaves your team and they go to another team, super important because you want them to keep growing. You want to be that leader who's like, who all the other members on your team will go, oh my God, that person helped me become this, right? Help me step into my purpose. I think those are all important things. And then autonomy. No team wants to be told what to do every single time, right? No developer wants to be like, tell me, you know, yes, fine, I'll wait for the marching orders. No, autonomy is super important. So to me, building people and then building products. Right. To me, building products, I am customer obsessed. I take a customer first approach to everything that I build. So that customer is always front and center. And I'm always thinking, okay, this thing we're building, how does the customer benefit from this? What does the future look like so that I'm not reacting, but I'm being proactive, right? Thinking from the outside in. Even if your organization is not working on that particular segment right now, but if they were going to go into the segment in the future, doesn't mean we have to rebuild the whole entire platform. Thinking from the outside in. I think those are all important skill set. Being strategic versus tactical, for instance, I think you need to be both. I've had conversations where people are like, well, I need to be one or the other. No, you need to be both because the strategic, right, is the vision and I call it the village, which is your leadership and all your partner teams and your scrum teams. They've all agreed to that strategic vision. So if everybody has an agreement on the strategic vision, then you can answer the tactical questions, which will happen, right? Which your scrum team will come to you and go, so this button, what should I do with it? But if the strategic vision is there, right, everybody understands it, then it's easy to answer the tactical. Storytelling, coalition building, being a transformational leader, I am
a people's champion.
I'm a people's champion, but also like, I think because people come from diverse background, right? And I remember what it was like to start out in product management. No one looked like me in product management when I first started out. I think it's important to tell the story of how, listen, this is how I screwed this up. And I'm still standing. And I think those things are important because, especially for people who come from diverse background, because they can go, okay, look, oh, Ronki just told a story about how she screwed this up. But she's still okay. She's here. Yeah. She survived. I can do this too. And I think those things are important. Representation is important. So I will be the first one in the room to give an example of how I screwed something up royally. Just like, to kind of put everybody at ease. But I also love leadership styles where everybody goes into the room to figure out the best solution for the customer and we come out with an answer and everybody understands the how, the what, and the why. And so there's no debating it outside. No one feels like they were left off. So those to me are all things that you sort of need to be a product manager, a great product manager that builds people and also builds products. You sort of have to be both of those things. You have to do both. So.
Great. So it's like you're building product magic and you're building people magic as well.
Exactly.
And by people, I mean both your employees and your customers.
Exactly. And your direct reports. And like it amazes me, even like your interns, when your interns come in for the summer, to me, that's your opportunity to also influence the kind of PM that they will be because they're looking at you, they're learning from you. And I want them to be a people champion, right? To open opportunities for their scrum teams. And even if it means all their scrum team leaves them and moves to other teams, I'd rather be that PM. Right, so.
That's great, Ronki. And, you know, you're almost inspiring a lot of us to get into product management ourselves. And that begs the question for so many of us looking to enter into product management. What do you suggest, getting an MBA or getting a certification?
Great question. So I get this a lot. So okay. I think they're both great. A certification teaches you about the discipline of product management. It helps you figure out what kind of product manager you want to be. It helps you to tell the story of the customer, do customer interviews, understand the personas. It helps you to, you know, create a user journey, right? And so forth. You learn the discipline of it. I think your MBA gives you the ability to lead an organization, the business part of it, right? How, when there's an organizational change, how you can bring your team along to not only understand that organization change, because people don't like changes, right? But to understand how that organization, the organizational change impacts them and how it's going to be better for everybody's, and, you know, but understanding it and kind of saying, okay, all right, I understand why the company's making these decisions. And also telling your story to your leadership. Right? Through PowerPoint presentation, that's sort of what your MBA gives you. It gives you the ability to talk, to tell the story in a business sense to your leadership so that they understand why your product is important. So I think the two separate things, I think either are great. I didn't have the certificate when I first started out, because, well, it was trial by fire for me. I kind of learned everything as I went. I learned things the hard way. I learned things the easy way. It's just trial by fire. But my MBA, I will say, has been the best decision that I made because I can tell stories. I can do presentations. I can also lead my team. I can lead my team and get them to understand and why the product vision is so important. Then the building people part to me, that's sort of where my MBA came in, right? To help me to not only be a coalition leader, but a transformational one as well. And a participatory leadership is another one that's really important where you sort of bring everybody together. And I think to me, for me, that's where my MBA adds my value there. So,
wow. So that's a lot of skills that one gains in an MBA. However, when we talk about resumes that we give to the recruiters, it's a limited piece of real estate, right? So what are some of the keywords that recruiters look for in your resume?
So I would recommend collaboration, right? Collaboration is one. If you were an intern over the summertime and you worked on a product, put what is the customer value? What is the revenue for that product, right? That's one. I think, you know, but make it, don't write a book, because think about it. If you think about people, I always think, say, think about people and their, and how long it takes them to, I mean, just think about people and the fact that they want information quickly and simple, right? So make it short and simple, but collaboration should be there because people want to know you collaborated, right? Leading should be there because we want to know you led a project and a product and this is how you led it. But yes, please include revenue if you can. If you cannot, that's okay. You could talk about it during your interview, but put the value of the product that you worked on and what it did for the organization.
So just to, you know, just to clarify that I got this right. So you want us to show collaboration. You want us to quantify the impact of the product we worked on. And finally, show leadership skills.
Exactly, because you're going to be a leader.
Yeah, perfect. So, great. Now my resume is amazing. I got an interview invite. Now, Ronki, can you please give me some tips for the interview so that I can one day become a product manager like you?
Sure. Number one interview. Number one interview tip. Please, please, please follow the CEO, the CTO, and the CFO of any company you are interviewing with. Follow them on LinkedIn. The world is big, but it's also small. More and more people, more and more companies are posting on LinkedIn. They are posting. They are posting how their company is doing. They are posting information about their corporate citizenship, right? What they're volunteering, what the companies are doing to make the world a better place. Follow them. And and read it, watch their videos. That way you can talk about it in the interview. If, if a company has an app, download the app. Use it, just like any other customers would. Figure out a way that you would improve that app or that product, whatever it is. Figure, you know, be ready to talk about this is what I would do to improve and this is why I would right. I would do it. And here's this, know the customer segment, right? I've been disappointed in interviews that I have had where people can't tell me what the customer segment is for the job that they're applying for. Google, try to find as much information about that company. Try to find what their third quarter earnings were, what their fourth quarter, what their second quarter earnings are. Figure out whether or not they did well or not and why they did well. Is there certain acquisitions that they bought? All these things are readily available online. But be ready to talk about those things. And most importantly, if you get an interview question where someone asks you if you ever failed, please be honest. Don't blame other product managers. Don't blame your dev team. Just they're trying to figure out what you learned from that failure. We've all failed.
Right.
So just say, yes, I built this product. It failed. Here's how it failed. And you can even tie it to your product, to your PM superpower, and say, here's how, you know, this product that failed, here's what I learned from it, and here's how moving forward, I will use those skills, I will use those failures to make better products. So those would be my advice.
So basically, LinkedIn is the new Facebook.
Exactly.
And then use the app that you're interviewing for and put yourself in the shoes of your end customer. Be well educated of the company you're interviewing for, and finally, own your failures and reflect on what you learned from it.
Absolutely. Listen, my favorite app, Starbucks.
Oh,
I could tell you three different things I could add to Starbucks right now. And I don't even work there. So, right. But that's what I mean, is really like taking a look at it, even, you know, taking a look at that company and the product that they're offering, and think and put yourself in that customer's perspective and go, how would I make this better?
So if there's anyone from Starbucks listening in, please reach out to Rocky. I will leave her contact details in the link below.
But how to make the Starbucks app better. So
you never know. You may get some free coffee out of it.
You never know. You never know. So.
Okay, Rocky. Now, the hot topic everywhere is how companies have been changing due to the pandemic and how individuals are ramping up to the new normal. So during this whole COVID season, what kept you going? Like, what was keeping you ticking?
For starters, I started walking 4 to 5 miles a day. Because during the pandemic, you know, we were all afraid to go out, and it started to bug me that I couldn't be outside. I couldn't see other people. So I started just going outside to just walking. And then I would see other people walking their dogs, and it just kind of made me feel better. So 4 to 5 miles, I started doing that. There are moments when I just feel like, oh my God, this is never going to end. And what I've been doing is I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to, there's one podcast I listen to where she does a lot of breathing exercises, which helps me a lot, about just kind of living in the moment. And then I know this sounds really cheesy, but honestly, I'm just so grateful. I tend to try to center myself and just remember that I'm where I am right now. It's not perfect. I wish I could be at work with my teams. I miss the whiteboards in a conference room. I miss the smell of markers. I miss running to my colleagues in cafeteria and things like that. I miss getting coffee with them. But they're all okay. They're all doing well. We're all alive and we're all still growing. It's just we're doing it in a different avenue. So that those are the things that keep me going, really. It's just I when things get to be like, oh my God, I want COVID to end. I want to go back to my normal life, is I just sort of go back to being centered, you know, just center myself and say, okay, all right, it's not perfect, but, you know, how can we do things? How can, so like, for instance, for my birthday last year, I couldn't go anywhere. This year, we went somewhere. We were careful. We wore a mask. Like right now, I'm trying to figure out if this is the new normal next year when I go to London. It just means I have to make sure I show my vaccination card and I have to wear my mask, and that's okay. You can still have those adventures. So, but I can't wait though until we go back to work. I miss everybody. So.
Oh, I know. I understand that. In fact, I'm so grateful that our MBA classes are in person this time, because the diverse perspectives that we get, it's just so hard to do that over a screen.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you need to collaborate in person, and that's one of the things I miss the most. So.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there are times when all of us are so focused on what's not going so right that we forget to focus on the blessings that we
Exactly.
have. So, what do you do in such times? What do you do when the gratitude kind of runs down?
Oh, I've had those moments. I've had those moments. So I called my best friend, and then I kind of vent, and he kind of says to me, "Are you done?" I'm like, "Yeah." And then and then he's like, "Did your puppy die today?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "Okay, all right." So, he's like, I know, exactly. He's like, "Do you have food to eat?" I'm like, "Well, yeah." He's like, "Okay, well then." No, but in all seriousness, I talk to him, and he just kind of reminds me of how far I've come. Reminds me of it reminds me that instead of feeling sorry for myself, I need to be of service. So that's the other thing, is then I turn it around and I go back to, okay, how can I be of service? Not just to my own family members, to my coworkers, like I said. And that's where that empathy part comes in, right? If I know that one of my coworkers is going through a hard time, calling that person and offering to support them in any way, shape, or form, but taking away the pity party and focusing on somebody else, I found has been helpful. Even if it means, you know, donating, you know, going to the store and donating cans of goods to, you know, Salvation Army, I mean, not Salvation Army, but to anybody really, soup kitchen, whatever it might be, then I kind of turn it around and try to be of service to somebody else. It means what? Going to sit with a friend while they get some tests done? Great, let's go. But those are the kind of ways I've been channeling it. But usually starts with my best friend and him going, "Oh, poor Rocky."
Her puppy died
It's
today.
like, "Did your puppy die?" Exactly. So you kind of go, "Well, no." But then it's like, "Okay, well, then you have it good, right?" I'm like, "No," but it kind of, yeah, he kind of level helps to level set me. So, yeah.
I absolutely love how he helps you look back to see how far you've come. And I think it was Kevin Hart who said the only time you should ever look back in life is to see how far you've made it.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow.
Yeah.
I never thought there'd be a Kevin Hart quote I'd liked, by the way.
So, until now, we've heard about the product manager, Ronki. Now let's listen to the fun Ronki.
Okay.
So, Rocky, if not a product manager, what was your moonshot plan? What would you be if time and money were unlimited?
Believe it or not, I was going to be an actuary for an insurance agent.
Ooh.
And
Damn, I'm glad this call is virtual.
I was going to be one. And then I was going to be an actuary. That was my life plan out of college. And then I decided. I would just, because I love architecture so much. I'm a big fan of, like, when I see, like, buildings like the New York Public Library or malls, I'm interested in the architecture of them. Like, who thought of this, and why does it look this way? And then I decided that wasn't my thing either. So I found my calling is product management. But those were the other two.
Wow, that's interesting. And you know, since you mentioned Starbucks being your favorite app, can you tell me what your favorite order at Starbucks is?
Oh, a cafe Americano with steamed almond milk.
Oh, wow, I thought that would be a huge list. You
Oh,
would be an
no.
absolute diva about it.
No, I know. But no, that's it's as simple as it. Cafe Americano, steamed almond milk. I order two ventis every day, one for morning, one for the afternoon. And my human interaction of the day are the folks at Starbucks.
Wow, twice a day?
Twice. Oh,
Twice
no,
a day?
I buy it all at once, and then I microwave it later on. So.
Oh, but still, now I know why Starbucks has such amazing revenue.
Exactly.
Thank you, Ronki.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. And Ronki, if you could have lunch with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton, he was the first Treasury Secretary in the United States, but he was an immigrant. I would have lots of questions that when he moved to the U.S., did he ever in a million years imagine that the banking system he created would still be our banking system today, and the impact that he had in building our country is still going. And I would ask what was going through his mind when they asked him to help write the Constitution. So.
Wow. Imagine that would be a fun and interesting
Exactly. Like, what was going on? Because I'm pretty sure Alexander Hamilton and Madison didn't imagine the world would be what it is today. So.
Wow. You know, I can just imagine 100 years down the line, someone's going to be saying, oh, I wish I could have lunch with Ronki.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I hope so.
See, if she ever thought this is where product management is going to be 100 years from today.
Oh, I know, exactly. Can you imagine what product management will be for the next even 50 years? I'm sure it's just going to be completely different. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, Ronki, moving on from Hamilton, if there was one top piece of advice you had for the recent college grads and aspiring product managers listening to this, what would it be?
You're going to get an intern role. You're going to get a product management role. You're going to have your own Scrum team. Mm-hmm. Use your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Cultivate alliances and be authentic. Be an authentic leader and everything else will follow.
Wow. That's amazing. And I love how use your voice has been the theme throughout this interview. And it just reflects how important that is to you. And just emphasizes on how important it is to building your own career.
It is. When you use your own voice, you'll figure out what kind of organization you want to work, right? A product-led versus engineering-led. When you use your voice, you'll not only enhance your teams, right? Because you're their advocates, you're the cheerleader for your Scrum team. But you can use your voice to make a difference with leadership. You can use your voice to make a difference with customers. You can use your voice to make a difference with your partners. You can use your voice to move a whole entire organization to buy into your product vision. But you have to use your voice.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you so much for doing this today, Ronki. I really appreciate your time. And I'm going to make sure I get you a cafe Americano with almond milk in it. The third one for your day.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ronki. This was really fun and very insightful, and I'm sure a lot of us appreciate you doing this for us.
Oh, thank you so much, Cindy, for doing this. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you.